My first car out of college was a Ford Mustang. Now, I couldn't afford the convertible, but I was able to swing a pretty sweet deal on the T-roof model. It had these two glass panels that could pop out, so I could still speed down the highway and feel the wind rushing in the car. Boy, would that be great today. I love that car. I drove over all New England, exploring places, back roads, going to the beach, the mountains, doing things with my buddies. It was a perfect vehicle for a young guy in his 20s. I had that car for about 2 years, but everything changed. It was a Monday morning in May, late in the month, and I was driving to work. I worked on the campus of Brandeis University, and the college has a ring road that surrounds campus with two entrances crossing at the front. And as I was pulling onto campus, another car came out of nowhere and slammed into me. Fortunately, both the other driver and I were unscathed. We walked away. Our cars, however, were not so lucky. I got the Mustang down to the local Ford dealership. The manager of the shop looked at it, wondering how it had actually been able to drive there, and then took it into the service bay and began to look at it. When he was done, he gave me a 2.5-page long estimate for repairs totaling $7,000. It's a $7,000 on a car 25 years ago. He told me, in his professional opinion, why bother? And as I looked at my car, and I thought about everything that would have to be done to it, I realized that after the work was completed, I would still be driving a broken, if refurbished, vehicle. So, my response too was, why bother? And when the insurance company took a look, they concurred. This car, which had been a symbol of youthful freedom, was my badge of membership in the American driving fraternity, was now nothing more than a hunk of junk. It was worthless. It was to be discarded. It's time for me to move on, get another car. And that is exactly the way people in the ancient world would have looked at a sick slave. He's done. Don't invest in the ill slave. Get a new one. There's a market, you can go buy one. Our centurion, however, does not think that way. When confronted with an ill slave, he doesn't say, why bother? He wants to care for him. He wants him to be healed. And we heard in the lesson that he was valued. And perhaps that's because the centurion had spent a lot of money on this slave. Maybe the slave had a particular set of skills or talents. But if we listen carefully to the whole story, we get the sense that something else might be going on. That the slave is valued because he is a person. The centurion, this soldier, has reached his rank because he is an accomplished leader of men. And he's posted to a border community where leadership would require a certain talent and gift. And he has come to know the locals. And he's earned their respect. And he has come to know their God. We read how he built the synagogue. And putting all the pieces together, we come to realize he didn't do this because he wanted to buy off their favor, keep the peace. But he was invested in the relationship he had with God. And and with these people, these strangers. He's a Gentile. They're Jews. They normally don't get along all that well. But something touched him. Something rose up in him. And so when his slave fell ill, and he heard that Jesus was in the area, he asked the leaders of the synagogue to go get him, to heal a servant. And then he has second thoughts. He begins to wonder, am I worthy to ask Jesus to do this? No, I'm not. He doesn't have any doubts about God's ability to heal the slave. Far from it. He talks about his role in the army. He knows what authority is all about. He can say jump and people respond, how high? If he can do that, how much more so God? When Jesus hears this, he is amazed. Now think about the Gospels. We don't often hear about Jesus being amazed, do we? He's the one who usually goes out and amazes other people. Yet this outsider, this soldier who's part of an oppressive force, has such faith that it grips Jesus, and Jesus heals the slave. Jesus has never seen faith like this in Israel. It's amazing. Now, this is the kind of story that we hear over the years, and it's familiar to us, but we may not really sit with it. Think about the centurion and how he prayed. How his faith manifested itself. There was no hedging. There were no ifs, no buts, no maybes for him. I can't speak for you and how you pray, but I know sometimes I do it cautiously. A little bit worried about being presumptuous when coming before God. And yes, I know God created the universe. And God resurrected Jesus. But is he really going to heal that sick person I know? Worst of all, is God going to respond the way I want God to respond to my prayer? Centurion didn't ask any of these questions. There were no qualifications to his faith. He knew Jesus could do the job. He knew God was capable of doing anything. Anything. And we can lose sight of that sometimes. It's possible to forget that. I still remember one of my divinity school professors saying that if he was in an airplane that was crashing towards the sea, he would not ask God to pull the plane out of the tailspin. He didn't think it was his place to do that. This lesson from Luke tells us otherwise. Ask. God expects us. God wants us to come before him fully and without reservation. We may not get the response we want, but that's the risk of being in a relationship. We can become attached to the wrong things. I remember after my car was crushed, I went back up to my office. I was able to walk there from the accident scene. And one of my colleagues asked me how I was. And I was furious. The person who hit my car was a graduating senior who'd imbibed a little too much at a party the night before. And my 2-year-old car was a wreck. And I had things to do, and now I was going to have to worry about the garage and deal with the insurance company. My colleague said, "No, how are you? Are you hurt?" And for the first time that morning, I thought about what had actually happened and where the other car impacted my car. And if it had been just a couple of feet further back, the car would have gone into the driver's side door rather than the engine block. And all of a sudden, my Mustang didn't really matter that much, because I was safe and healthy, and so was the other driver. Prayer can offer us perspective. Prayer can offer us hope. But for prayer to mean things, it has to have faith in it. And faith sometimes can be a challenge, and sometimes it can be a risk. And we might ask, why bother? The answer is simple. We have nothing to lose and everything to gain.